Blog Talk Radio.
Today, here on Cincy Business Talk with Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer, we'll be talking to business leaders about how they have grown their businesses and people. We discuss new strategies, tactics, and philosophies which lead to positive growth in our marketplace. Our program is sponsored by Sandler Training by Roth & Associates. Each week, we'll talk with our best Cincinnati area top executives about their tools and insights. Our regular listeners will be given the edge that will help them win in a competitive environment which we live. Simple solutions to complex problems which challenge all of us are rarely correct. We will address complex problems or opportunities with appropriate solutions. If you have questions or comments, contact Mike at mikeroth@rothconsulting.net or call Mike at 513-753-9400. Now your host, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer, Mike Roth.
Thanks, Scott. This is Mike Roth. I'm here today with Glenn Scherzinger of Sure Thing Pest Control. Thanks for joining us today, Glenn.
Well, thanks for having me.
Good. Today, Glenn has agreed to take any call-in questions that you'd like, and the call-in number today is 646-595-4916. So if you call in, we'll be able to get you on the show shortly after the first commercial break. Let me tell the folks a little bit about you and your company,
right,
Glenn. Glenn's been working here since he's been in the seventh grade, and when he was a freshman at Xavier High School. He worked in the termite business as part of the crew in the summers, mixing chemicals and baits after school.
Yeah, I guess when my father needed some cheap, inexpensive help, I ended up working on weekends and throughout. Well, it was good after high school or after school job when I could drive and different things. But basically, I've grown up in the industry doing just about everything you do through the pest control business.
Like, okay.
I say, from there, originally back years ago, we used to all have our own secret formulas and we'd mix them all up, and they were almost hidden secrets like the Coca-Cola formulation. But today the industry is a lot different. We're regulated by EPA and manufactured a lot differently, and it's a good change.
So you graduated from University of Cincinnati with what kind of degree?
I ended up with a business degree, marketing type degree, business administration.
Okay, and you got involved with a trade journal called Pest Control Technology.
Yeah, that was kind of a fun project. Getting out of school, you know, my father once again needed some help. Him and a couple of investors had bought this magazine. They were running it and having some difficulties getting it really up and running. So I soon found myself being an ad salesman, a photographer, traveling around and that. It was an interesting experience from the standpoint of coming out of college. I got a great exposure to marketing or a lot of different advertising agencies, from very conservative to very radical agencies.
Did you work with the government, EPA?
Well, got involved, too, with doing interviews with Russell Train and people from EPA, because that agency had just been mandated, and being able to have contact with those people and report to the industry what was going to happen and what was coming forward was real exciting. And I also got to see a whole different side of the industry there, from the standpoint that selling to distributors, working with manufacturers, I got to understand really what they had to go through to get their market or their services to the marketplace. It was a whole different side that I probably would have never had the opportunity to see or have a real exposure to.
Mm-hmm. So your dad was in the pest control business.
Actually, my grandfather started a business back in 1934, and I'm the third generation. With the kids coming up, there'll be fourth generations involved.
Okay. And in the period of time you've been involved with the business, how many different companies have you been associated with or owned?
Well, it's been kind of nice where the pest control business was able to give us great opportunities to try other things. We had a fleet maintenance facility for a while. Obviously, we had a lot of trucks. We needed to get them worked on and opened up a facility where eventually we were taking care of about 300 cars and trucks on a fairly regular maintenance. ended up, because people would get on a preventative maintenance program, we'd cut people's maintenance costs down considerably.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really emphatic in scheduling people and even having spare vehicles and that so we could switch out. And we're even doing a little bit of on-site maintenance.
How many years were you in the fleet maintenance business?
We did that for about 10, 12 years. It was a lot of fun. And then things moved on. We just shifted. And I guess the same way with the magazine, somebody came in and made me an offer I couldn't refuse. And
So you sold the fleet.
So we've sold it and moved on. Same way the magazine. Eventually we sold the magazine and that moved on.
Mm-hmm. You got involved with the lawn care business as well?
I had a turf business for probably 25 years. That was a very interesting and good industry to be involved with also. But
a lot of people have lawns.
A lot of people have lawns. And dealing with a lot of the same things you'd have even in a pest control business. It's still good customer service. I was working with pesticides, some of them dealing with insects and on lawns, but yet fungicide issues and other biological problems. So I relived my youth biology classes and some of that stuff. But it just gave you a different exposure, being able to actually capitalize, too, on one customer base and build another business based on another customer base and things. So we could sell multiple services to customers. So we filled that need we could see there.
So how long ago did you leave your family business?
It's been about 16 years ago that I left the family business.
Mm-hmm. And after you left the family business, What did you do?
I bought the assets. The turf business had struggled for a couple of years because even though you may have good product lines and that, sometimes our pest control business was really getting more attention than the turf business, so it didn't quite develop as well as it could. So I purchased the assets of the turf business,
mm-hmm.
Revitalized it, energized it. We decided to branch out doing tree and shrub care work with that. Eventually, in order to keep guys busy, and I hated laying good people off, we discovered Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And started the Christmas decorating business. And we've done some property management and other things along associated with it, operated a leasing company for vehicles for not only our company, but several other companies.
Are you still doing any of that?
Most of that I'm still doing.
Really? You're still doing the Christmas light business?
Christmas light business is a great thing. It's
highly seasonal.
Highly seasonal. We work 5 months out of the year on it. And I guess what helps me there the most is even though it's a seasonal business and I don't have the turf company anymore, who I really used to depend on those employees to do it, I got a group of people that come back every year, other landscapers I know, mowing guys, some people work for different golf courses. And when they get laid off or those businesses slow down, I can provide a good employment opportunity for them until they get called back in the spring, much like I used to do with my turf guys when I didn't want to lay them off. I had to find something for them to do, and Christmas was consistent. I'd be delivering fruit baskets or packages for their local delivery service. I mean, we tried a lot of different things, did lawnmower maintenance. I'd do anything to try to earn a buck and see if I could build a business off of it, and some of them were good and some of them weren't so.
Mm-hmm. What was the worst business you ever got involved with?
The worst one? Just probably delivering packages and trying to get those there on time and that.
You competed with UPS?
No, we actually didn't compete with them. We would go to the local delivery services, and since we have larger vans, 3-to-1-ton vans, we could take pallet loads of products and get them in there. And our guys were not necessarily really attuned to running those kind of stops, taking care of those kind of deliveries and things. So, and it was sporadic. I mean, some days we would work 5 days a week, and I'd have two or three crews going and working doing that, and then the next week we'd never do anything. So trying to switch and keep people busy, it just didn't work out real well.
So in your pest control business, sure thing, pest control.
Yes, sir.
What percentage of your time is actually devoted to the pest control business today, Glenn?
Well, once again, it's going to depend on the seasonality of things. But
sure.
Right now
we're probably going into summer.
Right now it's summer. I'm probably putting 80% of my time in on the pest control business. That'll probably shift when we go to Christmas. Probably 80% of my time goes to Christmas, and the other 20% goes to other things.
Mm-hmm.
The leasing kind of runs itself, and that the property management we do and the property acquisitions. You know, those aren't done every day or things, and we hold on and maintain a lot of the properties we do now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they don't take a ton of time, but they may, like last spring or spring, I bought a purchase a building and had some people after Christmas and were still available, and it was a good thing to help. Timing was perfect. We were able to renovate the building, use some of those folks and their skill levels to get the job done.
So you act as your own property manager too?
I try to, but sometimes it gets to me, and we've reduced the size of some of our holdings a little bit over the last few years, so we don't have a on-staff manager the way we used to.
Okay. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your credentials in the pest control business?
I guess I've done a lot as far as industry-wide things, from being on, I've been with the Ohio Pest Control Association, board of directors on it, with the Kentucky Pest Control Association, kind of the same thing, worked myself up through there, and was president for a couple of years of that association, and turf business, same way, the Ohio Turf Association, a lot of work there. I did a lot of legislative stuff with a group called the Ohio Pesticide Applicators group, and we would do a lot of lobbying, legislative work, maybe a little similar to what we did with EPA, talking to some of those folks, but It was more of a lobbying group, watching regulations that were coming down and being able to work with both EPA, but more on a state level with the Ohio Department of Agriculture. And that was an interesting group, too, because of the broad spectrum, because we had right-of-way people, we had pest control people, lawn care people, utility companies that do various amounts of work, and the farmers were even involved with that. Anybody that really dealt with any type of pesticide application, it was an interesting group, and I represented both the pest control and lawn care industry with that.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, you're associated on the board for a charter school here in Cincinnati?
Yeah, that's kind of a new thing. I never thought myself never being the world's best student in school anyway.
Be fooled.
Yeah. I ended up being on a board of a charter school, Cincinnati College Preparatory Academy, and that's been a great experience. It's been great to see kids really be motivated and really want to go to school and succeed and be part of that.
Where is that located?
There's actually two campuses. Our one campus is down on in Madisonville on Bramble Avenue, right at the corner of Bramble and Homer. And then the other campus is down on Lynn Street. And it's a K-12 facility. And our facility up on Bramble is actually a K-6.
Okay.
That's been fun.
How'd you get involved with the board of a charter school?
Well, we'll go back to one of my real estate transactions where on a kind of a crazy idea, I bought a school, one of the old Cincinnati public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And we were actually with a partner of mine, a friend of mine, going to turn it into like a Pendleton Square area for artists. And the classrooms were going to turn into studios. And I've always been, my friend was a curator of the Charlie Harper art collection, so we were going to turn it into maybe two little Charlie Harper museum, but some of those things didn't work out, various things either from our part, not thinking out things very well, or zoning issues or things, and eventually the charter school bought the school, and that turned out to be an okay real estate transaction, and then they asked me to be on the board, so I thought I could help them out a little.
Okay, so if you want to call in and ask us a question, our number again is 646-595-4916. We're going to take a short break and listen to Sandler Rule number 49.
Hello, this is Steve Herzog of Sandler Training. Today we're going to address three ego states with regard to how they apply to the salesperson, not the prospect. With regard to the salesperson, we learned in these three ego states before that there's a parent, adult, child. The parent ego state really has the place where we stored our rights, the wrongs, the do, the don'ts, the should, the shouldn'ts. Another area of the parent ego state is the nurturing parent. These are the words of encouragement and suggestions, etc., that were given to us from our parents as we developed. The adult ego state, you might recall, really has to do with our computer, our processing, data in, data out. The aspect of adult is really an unemotional basis of how we deal with people, and certainly an area that we want to think about when we're a sales professional. The last ego state, it's a child ego state. In the child, what we are doing is really, you know, addressing our feelings of how we felt about those critical parent tapes or sometimes nurturing parent tapes that we had. These are the addressing of the should and shouldn'ts and wrongs and rights and do's and don'ts and how we reacted to them as a child ego state. So what we learn in this is that the important aspect of how we work with people, it's the most important area that we think of, is that as a sales professional, our child must stay in the car. There's no place for a child ego state in the selling process. And therefore, we want to make sure that we remember that in the child ego state, it's good for the prospect to have it. It's an ultimately important part of them in their buying decision. It is not to be used in the sales role. This is Steve Herzog addressing Rule 49, leave your child in the car.
This is Mike Roth. I'm back with Glenn Scherzinger. Glenn, before we go on, I'll let everyone know that over here at Sandler, we're doing a series of Networking Works workshops on Monday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. If anyone wants to get some more information about that, they can call in to us at 513-753-9400, and we can give them information about how they can become better networkers to grow their business. Now, back to your world, Glenn. We'll talk about the Sure Thing Pest Control Company. If someone wants to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
It's a phone call away.
And the phone number is?
It's area code 513, of course, here in Cincinnati. And then it's 247-0030. Or our website is surethingpc.com. So
easy enough. Okay. Now, you're doing both residential and commercial work in pest control?
Primarily our residential business is where we're geared to. And in the niche we fill very well. Not that we don't do some nice commercial businesses along with that, but by far we're more of a residential company versus commercial company.
Right. And tell the folks how you go to market.
We do a lot of mass advertising, I guess, through TV, although we really try to figure out who our true demographics are and kind of tailor what TV commercials or that we're buying to that demographics or that audience that we want to get to. And we also do just send some just broad spectrum things like billboard advertising. Seems to be a great thing that helps us keep our name out in front of people. Keeping our vehicles clean and sharp looking well. Decal helps out a lot.
Mm-hmm. How many vehicles do you actually run?
We're running about 16 vehicles right now, routes.
Well, that's a lot of bugs.
A lot of gas.
The gas, not diesel.
Yeah, no. Well, we're running smaller vans. We don't carry like we used to tons of material. The industry is once again keeps changing to more and more different. More concentrations, I guess. Products that we used to have to put 2-3 ounces, 4 ounces, 5 ounces to a gallon, we now put milliliters of product to a gallon of water when we dilute it down. So you're carrying less, or products today too may come in a more of a powdered form and a dissolvable pack, where we'll just take that packet, drop it in, agitate it real well in the packet, and everything dissolves, so we don't even have any waste except for maybe the cardboard container or the foil packet that it came in. But we may have 100 different doses in the foil pack before we get rid of it.
Right.
So there's a lot of different changes from that, just like a lot of industries have gone away from. Back in the good old days when we used chlordane, and we used to buy that by a 55-gallon drum, and we'd get 20, 30 of them in at a time, and they'd just be sitting out there in a warehouse. And now that same amount of material comes in a 55-gallon drum of material now comes in a little box with four disposable packets in it, or dissolvable packets, and gives you heart failure sometimes. And the cost significance has gotten smaller by any means, but
they charge you the same as well as you add the water.
Yeah, you just throw in the water, add water. That hasn't changed, but the packaging and everything else sure has, and the mode of operation with it.
Okay. So it just hits me that you might be a great prospect for Brian Wielhauser's electric trucks.
Yeah, well, they would be. We would be.
You know, because all of your trucks are operating really 25, 30 miles of your home base.
And really our guys are fortunate. We allow them to take their vehicles home, so they actually start from their house. And most of the guys live real close to the route areas, too, so that keeps us a little bit more efficient. We're not backtracking a lot. We can get right out to people as soon as we can.
In your business, you don't have salespeople, do you?
We do, but not being a more, industrial-driven business.
Commercial-driven
business, we probably would be having a little bit more of a sales staff. But currently, it's really our technicians are doing a lot of our selling. We do a lot of sales over the phone with people there. Customers call in, they want an estimate of what it's going to cost, and we give them a quote, explain the service we're going to do over the phone. So really those customer salespeople there or those customer service people become kind of salespeople. They're not.
How many people like that do you have?
I have three customer service people going on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the phone rings the fourth or fifth time, I get to pick it up and answer, and I'm Mr. Customer Service then myself.
Okay, well.
But then I also, Jerry and myself, my partner, find ourselves out in the field doing a certain amount of inspections and things. So I'm still involved, I guess, every day in a little bit of sales. And we were talking about Christmas before. I do all the sales with Christmas and stuff right now.
Well, you should beat me up to tell you more about the customer service program. As well as the Sandler Foundations program, currently running three sets of Sandler Foundations.
All right.
Yeah, we have it. We ran the first set today, off of Fridays, and we're going to start another eight class segment here in Cincinnati on the 27th of June. Mm-hmm. So that's really.
Customer service and take care of people, keep building your repeat business and get customer referrals. It's amazing the amount of, when you say build your business, well, it took us a while to get our name out there and get our service name out there. And once we've done that, the referrals and just people knowing that our reputation is good is helps us get those calls we need.
Yeah, Sandler gave us a customer service program about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
We ran it the first time. It's 12 weeks, 2 hours a week. It's clearly not a sales program. It's clearly a customer service function,
mm-hmm.
Designed to make the customer experience better on one side, and on the other side, to make the life of the people on the inside of the customer service long-term employees, because turnover is just terribly expensive to get the right people. We can talk a little bit about that. You know, right now in your business, what do you see as the opportunities and the obstacles?
The opportunities in the business right now are really trying to stay on the forefront and see what's coming next. The perfect example is insects follow cycles, much like anything else in life does. And when I started in this business years ago, our number one insect was roach control. I mean, they were all over, you know, they were our number one problem. And then all of a sudden, different treating techniques came along, better materials came along, and the next thing you know, roaches aren't an issue. They're not like we used to be. If anything, ants are our number one issue. But just even a change now where termites used to be 30% of our gross volume, mm-hmm. termite control. Today, it's 8 to 10%. And the fact that the products we use today are so good at controlling termites in neighborhoods, we wipe out colonies instead of chasing them from one house to another. So in a subdivision where 20 years ago, 40 out of 50 homes would have been treated for termites, today probably 10 or 15 of those 50 homes will get treated for termites. So there's just not as much termite business out there. But on the other hand, now comes the resurgence of bed bugs. And, you know, it's just, once again, shifting gears, trying to see what you needed to do. And when we started getting calls on these things 8 and 10 years ago, we were real surprised. But yet we could see a trend where this insect was going to really be a kind of nightmare, not only for us in some ways, but even for the customer.
So this is the insect that I have the picture on flashing on the screen every 60 seconds.
Yep. That's our favorite friend, the bed bug.
The bed bug, and what is the bed bug doing?
The bed bug is really a worthless kind of creature in a way, because all he does is eat and then goes back and does absolutely nothing. Kind of reminds me of a teenager that gets up off the couch, goes get something to eat, then goes back and lounges around until he gets hungry again. I mean, other than that, a bed bug has no benefit. He's strictly a parasite to us humans, and it causes everybody a lot of anguish and a lot of problems. They don't transmit any diseases or anything like that, like a mosquito or a lot of other nuisance or vector type pests do, but bed bugs can still be a traumatic experience.
We have a rule here at Sandler that we don't like to use words or phrases or three-letter acronyms, TLAs or FLAs, four-letter acronyms, that other people don't understand. So Glenn, you said vector insects, and I don't know.
Oh, vectors. Vector insects are insects that are really cause issues or spread disease. A mosquito, because he spreads disease, is what's called a vector. A roach can spread all kinds of salmonella, food poisoning. They can also create asthma problems and other things. So he's a vector. A bed bug, on the other hand, or even a ladybug, let's say, that has no adverse effect on you or I in transmitting disease, are then not considered vectors or pests where public health officials would come involved with. In the bed bug situation, since he is not a vector and he doesn't transmit disease, health departments really in some ways really don't want to deal with him. But on the other way, now that since they cause so many problems, people want them to be called vectors even though they're not. I hope I explained that.
Good. So a disease related insect would be a vector.
Or any kind of disease-bearing organism, like a raccoon, a rat, a mouse, because a raccoon spreads rabies, he's a vector. So any kind of animal,
a
insect.
Mole?
A mole doesn't spread any kind of disease, so he's not a vector.
No, I just want him out of the way.
Yep, I do too.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Glenn Scherzinger after a few words about Sandler.
This is Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer. Many salespeople tell us business was really easy. They likened it to gathering fruit in an orchard full of ripe trees. They gathered the low-hanging fruit. They had to get baskets to pick up the fruit that was already fallen. They never had to climb a tree. They worked this way for 10 or 15 years. Given the strong economy, this was no problem. What are you hearing now? The economy has slowed down. Salespeople are competing on price. There's still business now, but salespeople have to work harder. The fruit has not fallen from the tree, and there's no low-hanging fruit. The fruit is there, but it's higher up in the tree. The problem is their salespeople have forgotten how to climb. Do your salespeople know how to climb? If you or your team needs to learn how to climb through and up out of tough economic times, call me, Mike Roth, at 513-646-6523, or check our website at rothconsulting.net. This is Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer. At the first sign of trouble, there are three types of business leader. The first type of leader is like a turtle. He pulls his head and tail in and hides in his shell. Turtles hunker down, just trying to survive.
The second type of leader is an opportunist. They're like eagles. Eagles spread their wings and take advantage of the winds. They catch the storm wind and rise to new heights. The third group, between turtles and eagles, are called turkeys. Turkeys are average and anxious. They huddle together and move. They never soar. However, turkeys are easy prey for those who seize the opportunity and soar. If someone in your industry goes out of business, are you going to get the business? The question is, which type of leader are you? Will you seize the opportunities to take market share and grow, or will your fate be like the turkeys? If you're serious about growth, call me to arrange a confidential meeting, 513-646-6523, or check our website at rothconsulting.net. This is Mike Roth, back again with Glenn Scherzinger. Glenn, you're willing to take some calls, aren't you?
I'm willing to take some calls.
Well, waiting for someone to call at 646-595-4916. Glenn, in your business as a pest control guy, put on your magic crystal ball or crystal look into the future apparatus. And tell me what you see in the future. You know, if bed bugs are number one today, what's happening? Are they falling down? I heard we were just rated as the number two bed bug city in America.
Yeah. Cincinnati is, and it keeps being number two, three, and there are a lot of insect and bed bug problems in Cincinnati. But our industry will rise and fall a little bit, like I said a few minutes ago, based on insect problems. Weather will sometimes have an adverse effect on us. 2 years ago, we had a great season going when all of a sudden we got that long drought in July, August, and we didn't have any rain, I think, for almost 12 weeks. And, you know, insects didn't have any moisture to breed, and they're just like us. When it's hot and dry, they don't like moving around much or doing anything. They just kind of get through. And so hence our business dropped off considerably because there just was not as much insect activity. Mm-hmm. It wasn't anything we did, wasn't anything competitors did. And it's just like a lot of things, sometimes you lose the demand for your product and you have to be able to react quickly to, like, the biggest problem we had then was I had committed to some advertising, could not really get it back, or, you know, you don't know you're hurting until you're hurting.
Right.
And
right.
Maybe I didn't do as much purchasing on some of the chemicals, and that was a safe thing, but I still had to revive myself from the advertising dollars we spent to market. When the bugs aren't there, no matter what I spend, nobody's going to call me.
Mm-hmm. So just to change the subject, maybe 90 degrees,
mm-hmm.
Glenn, based on your experience, why don't you tell the folks how you think someone should select a insect treatment company? I think we've all seen the ads for your company and some of the others, but how should someone who's not an expert in insect control pick a control company?
I would definitely talk to a couple different companies. Talk to your neighbors, ask them if they've had any issues or problems with insects, and get referrals from them. Usually if somebody's had a good experience with somebody, they'll remember the name and refer them, whether it's us or one of the competitors, because although not all my competitors are as good as we are, there are one or two that are a fast second or third, and
mm-hmm.
there are good companies out there and people that in good companies that are willing to take care of a lot of pest issues in that. So get out there, do a little research on that. And then, once again, get two or three different calls or estimates from folks. See who's really can design a program or solve your program, who's maybe not going to do something that's cookie cutter all the time. Obviously, I think dealing with a local company versus a national company is keeping money closer and home here in the greater Cincinnati area and that. But yet, good national companies and regional companies are out there, and they can take good care of people too. But go out there, learn a little bit about what you can on the insect that you're dealing with, but also be careful. There's a lot of bad information sometimes out there on the internet, and finding good websites or good information is key too.
Mm-hmm.
But just do your homework. You know, we're on Angie's List, so Angie's List is a good resource for you. Better Business Bureau, you can check with them and see if anybody's got complaints, although we're not necessarily, we don't pay a fee to the Better Business Bureau, so they don't necessarily always recommend us. Cause
are you a member of the Better Business
Bureau? No, we're not. We're not.
Any particular reason?
Part of it mainly is I don't want to buy into something. And Angie's List has been a nice fit for us with all the referrals and things. And then not that I have many problems with customer issues or that, but, you know, we just didn't see where.
So Angie's List has been
it's been a great thing for us.
Yeah, okay. So you recommend that people join Angie's List?
I think so. I think you'll find what you say there. If you're not, whether it's us or any contractor, the only way to be on that list is be referred to and have a lot of referral letters. So
good. Let me remind the folks about who's coming up next week. We have Martin Wilhelmy from UBS, who's going to be talking about some of the things we ought to be thinking about in terms of financial planning on Friday, the 22nd. We're going to have Dan Nyer, who's going to talk about commercial development here in Cincinnati.
That'll be good talk. Dan's a good sharp guy.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. Following week, we're going to have Walter Becker. He's a business broker here in Cincinnati. He specializes in small businesses. So if you're thinking about buying or selling a small business, make sure you listen to Walter.
I've done a little bit of that in my career. It's good.
It sounded like it, yeah. And then the 29th of June, we're going to have Rick Apuzzo from Sky Eye Weather. He's going to be talking about how professional weather forecasting fits into people's business plans.
Well, that'd be interesting because when we were in the turf business, that fit into our business way more so than it maybe does today. But, you know, being able to know when it was going to rain, being able to watch a storm coming in. And then we also did snow plowing and being able to have a satellite feed for snow and seeing how the snow's coming in or storms and when to bring people in and not.
Yeah,
Rick could be a valuable asset.
He's a really valuable guy. He's built a pretty interesting business around.
He's funny as heck.
Professional weather forecasting.
He's funny. He's got a great sense of humor.
He does. Those of you who are regular listeners of the show might wonder what happened to the episode with Jody Schmidt-Gosseling from Possible Worldwide. She was ill that day, and we had a substitute, and she has rescheduled for July 26th. That's Thursday, July 26th. She is president of one of the country's largest advertising agencies, Possible Worldwide. Glenn, what do you think people are looking for now? When they go out and look for pest control?
I think they're looking for somebody that's going to solve their problem, do it efficiently, be fair with them, give them a good value, be trustworthy.
Do you only do insects, or do you do those other things like gophers and raccoons?
We don't do really nuisance animal removal. It's a a business that just didn't fit our model very well.
Okay, so thing pest control means insects.
Insects. We do mice, rats.
Oh, okay.
Those type of things. But
the house pests.
But if it comes to like a raccoon, squirrels, chipmunks, they just didn't fit into our marketing plans and our business model. And actually, there's a couple people that do that better than we ever did. So we refer folks to them, and it works out. When they run into mice and things in attics, they refer stuff to us, and you kind of have a certain limit on your expertise sometimes of where you can go and what you can do.
Mm-hmm. In terms of marketing your business, you said you purchase a lot of TV, probably other business-to-consumer advertising, print.
Don't do a lot of print.
Mm-hmm.
Just TV and some of the other things have been a little better for us. Radio has not really been a great media for us.
I can understand that.
And neither is really print in some ways, because you got to be right there sometimes at the time. But I mean, they're all sources that we use off and on, but they're just not our mainstay all the time.
What is your internet initiative like?
Our internet is still working with trying to maintain our presence as best we can through different search engine optimization. Keep our website up to date so it's informative for people. We do find that...
Do you have a blog?
No, we don't have a blog. We have a Facebook page and that, but we don't blog.
How often do you post on your Facebook fan page?
I would think probably, once again, it depends on what's going on. In the wintertime, when things are a little bit more quiet, we're not posting near as much as when we run into things that start to occur now. So maybe every 2 or 3 weeks or so, we may post something, depending upon when we see, like, insects buzzing around. When carpenter bees started buzzing around earlier this spring, we blogged in or made some things with the Facebook pages and that.
But wait a minute. You just said an insect that I never heard of. Carpenter ant, I know about.
Correct.
I know about bees. You said a carpenter bee?
A carpenter bee is kind of a cool little insect that drills a perfect 5/8 inch hole. It usually goes into wood fences or fascia on a house, and or decks. They'll get up underneath decks, and they bore this hole. They go up into the wood a little bit of a distance, and then they tee it off, and they'll drill a couple inches each side. So they make actually a perfect tee in there. Once they got their tee made, they will lay eggs in there and seal them off. And eventually, later on in the season, you'll have 5 or 6 more carpenter bees come out. But they can really ravage a piece of wood over a period of time. We find them sometimes around factory settings where there's old pallets sitting out, and they'll attack them and things. They're a destructive pest to an extent, but they're harmless. They'll dive bomb you. They'll chase you around. And if you can, the female's the only one that has a stinger. So if you can identify the male and you can be real brave, you can grab him and hold him in your hand, and people will think, God, he's the bravest guy in the world.
And what does it look like?
And it's a big bumblebee, basically. And when you grab that male and hold him in your hand, people, like I say, God, why didn't that bee sting him? Those big bumblebees, but they're really pretty harmless.
Interesting. And so,
when we see a different thing coming up, we'll alert people of what's going on. Like the carpenter bees, hey, they're there. Call us, we'll take care of them. But don't go get terrified. It's not an insect. It's even though he may act aggressive, he's not going to be aggressive like a yellow jacket's nest or more certain types of wasps maybe or things.
Yeah.
So we just, when things change, you know, termite swarming season, we'll say, hey, termites are swarming. We're happy. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, well, I've seen your wife walking around with a termite in her hand.
Yeah. Go infest the neighborhood. It's a wonderful thing. Hey, the more pestilence, the happier I am. So, I can give you my worst joke if you like.
Okay, we'll hear your worst joke, and then we'll go to a short commercial break.
You know why my preacher and I get along so well together? We're both into pestilence.
Okay, we're going to be back in a...
Good time to do a break.
We're going to do a short commercial break, and we're going to give you Sandler Rule number 14.
Hi, I'm Bob Sinton of Sandler Training. I'm here today to talk to you about rule number 14. A prospect who is listening is no prospect at all. You may have heard this before, but Dave Sandler told me a long time ago that you should follow the rule called 70-30 rule, where the client talks or the prospect talks 70% of the time, and you, the salesperson, talk 30% of the time. Most salespeople I run into in my 30 years of doing this understand that. The problem with it is, how do you go about doing it? Well, most, if not all, salespeople know their features and benefits and the power of what their company can provide clients. So it's easy for them to explain their features and benefits to a client. The problem with that is it doesn't necessarily elicit responses from a client. So what we have to train ourselves to do to be more successful and more professional is take your features and benefits and phrase it and structure it in such a way where it actually elicits a conversational response from your client. For example, a feature and benefit your company may include you can reduce expenses and save them some overhead and save your clients some money in the long term or short term. Well, a lot of people can say that. That's on your website. It's on your brochure. A more effective way is to say, hey, Ed, can I ask you a question? What we've done with companies and individuals like yourself is help save them money with some software that helps them reduce expenses, get rid of waste, and adds more money to their bottom line. Do you have anything like that happening here? And if so, can you tell me a little bit about it? What that question does is it obviously elicits initially a yes or no response, but then it quickly goes down the tunnel of what I like calling a conversational dialogue, if you will, between salesperson and client, and you find yourself talking only 30% of the time, and the client ends up talking 70% of the time, and that creates a more of a win-win relationship. And that's Sandler rule number 14. A prospect who is listening is no prospect at all.
This is Mike Roth. I'm back with Glenn Scherzinger. Glenn, I'm going to ask you one of my favorite questions. In business, we've got the theory of operation here that says there are no such thing as simple solutions to complex problems. When you have complex problems, you have to apply a complex solution if you expect a resolution. So maybe you can think of a complex problem that you've had over there in your long business career and experience that you came up with a unique complex solution that perhaps other people could model and use in their businesses?
Well, that's a great question, but I can't think of anything that put me in that much panic mode or whatever things where we would have, I guess when I left my family business 16 years ago, I had a great staff behind me. I had a wonderful group of people. I had probably 60 people that I really worked well with and respected. But yet I had to leave that and almost start all over again. And I guess with that, just having a thought process to persevere or to make a good plan and stick to it. I probably had never really worked hard on a business plan before. So I really had to work hard to come up with plans like that, a strategy of where we were going, put together my team again, and then really start to grow things and create opportunities not only for me but for other people.
So was that the first time you had a business plan when you started your own thing?
I would say a real detailed business plan. I don't think you can really function or operate without having some kind of long-term planning or short-term planning. And I usually carry it with me right next to me here, a booklet or a notepad. I carry 3x5 index cards with me all the time, and I'm constantly making notes, or I got my goals set up on those cards, and I have my short-term, long-term goals.
And you have your goals on 3x5 index cards that you carry around all the time?
Most of the time I have them with me, yeah.
That's great.
And I usually have a pad in my pocket and a pen that I can just grab that if somebody asks me for something. I can jot a note down real quick. And I used to use dictation machines and other things, but I found that writing it down. Then the cards also, too, I have index files where I have those cards filed away. And a lot of times, even just talking to employees, if I'm making, I'll put a note on a card and talk to Joe about what a great job he did on a particular account, or maybe I talk to Joe about the not so great job he could have done on those accounts. But I'll make notes and file those away in those individuals' files, and it just helps me stay organized and kind of keep myself going.
So you don't actually throw the notes away; you keep them.
Well, a lot of them I do. I mean, I throw a lot of cards away, too. But cards are transfer notes to different cards and that. I can go back and probably find goals I had 10 years ago for the lawn care business somewhere in that file when I would take them and every few months rewrite the cards and do things with them.
Mm-hmm. Do you have long-term goals?
I don't know if I could say it's a long-term goal other than survival to an extent.
Long-term would be over 12 months.
I know where I want our business to be in 12 months and how I want to be growing it and where I want to be in 3 to 5 years and try to correct things where we need to be. If we need to, if all of a sudden we need to increase our marketing or like now even Adam, we were running pretty lean and mean and I hated to bring another employee on because I didn't want to necessarily do overhead, but there was no way that we were going to build our business. We were running everybody to death without bringing on some more people. So even though you try to run lean and mean, sometimes you still have to.
So this year, 2012, you've hired one new person or two?
Two people to fill new routes and new areas and things.
These are technicians?
Technicians, correct.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you go to hire a technician in tech?
It's interesting that we're in a fortunate position where we have people kind of searching us out, or we'll have somebody that comes in and we'll just hold on to their application and maybe talk to them briefly, and all of a sudden a couple months later we see an opportunity and see if they're still available. But we're constantly out always looking for good people either within our industry or outside our industry. I've looked for people that have taken great care of me per se at a food mart that I go to or something, or someplace maybe in a little different industry, or they may be a heating and cooling technician and I like the way he seems to be doing his job. I've seen him a couple different times, you know, I approach him and hey, if you're ever unhappy, I like it, give me a call, we can talk, you know. So you're always scouting and looking for people, so when you have the need, you can find it. Now, I'm still tell you occasionally when we do Christmas, I have to advertise for people, and that's a whole different thought process. But usually with the pest control, I can plan ahead on seeing where we're going to need routes and opportunities and know and start looking ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. What's the service territory that you have?
Pretty much we operate a greater Cincinnati up to south of Dayton. We go into downtown Dayton a little bit, but not north of there, and then we go down into Crittenton or Walton, Kentucky, I guess about as far as kind of south we go, and east, should I forget the name of the little lake out through the east off of 32 we go to here.
East Fork Lake?
No, it's past there. There's a little like lake community about 20 miles off the road there. We've been out and doing some work there, and we go over into Lawrenceburg and right over to Indiana a little bit, Laura and things.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought of expanding your company outside of the Cincinnati metro?
We have, and I pursued that, but when I made the shift, that was probably 16 years ago. That probably took a back burner, and more so than anything because I had to reestablish myself. Mm-hmm. And then I've also had the opportunities to grow other businesses and other entities that there really wasn't a lot reason to leave or go to another town, and I don't want to travel.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good reason.
I mean, years ago, I wouldn't have minded it or things. Set up a branch and get all that going on, and then in that infancy you're going, or even trying to do acquisitions. Acquisitions have been tough to do the last few years, and I probably in the last 5 years found myself in the best way of trying to do an acquisition and grow, but yet there's few and hard between to really acquire at what I feel is a price that can deliver a good return for our investment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Acquisitions are a legitimate way to grow a business. A lot of them fail because they're improperly, I'll call it researched, or due diligence wasn't
proper. I couldn't agree with you more. I bought a lawn care company one time, and it was probably the worst thing I ever did. And I didn't rely on some thought process I had, but just didn't research it as much. And as I said before, with selling a few different businesses, even when I sold our turf business, I learned a heck of a lot more on due diligence at various times with some of those sales than I did knowing going in a little bit blind. And I guess the more experience you get in life, the more you learn.
So let's take that as a question, Glenn. You know, based on the experience that you've had up to this point in time in the pest control business, because it's more than 16 years in total, what would you say to someone who's leaving the Fortune 1000, they're taking their package money and they want to buy a business? What advice would you give them?
whatever business you're going to do or whatever you're going to do, you got to enjoy it and understand the industry and enjoy that what you're doing. When you quit enjoying it, it's no fun, and you're never going to be successful unless you enjoy it. I've always enjoyed the pest control business. It's fulfilled a need that I have for a little bit of science, a little bit of business knowledge, a lot of different things that it can touch on in that make it intriguing. And, I've been able to do field research with chemicals. So there's a lot of things I've been able to do, and it's made it a fun industry for me. Not the pest or lawn care or some of the other ones weren't.
So that would be number one. Whatever business you're thinking of buying, make it a fun business. What would be number two?
Knowing that you can put the time to make it succeed. I see so many people think that I'm only going to work 40 hours a week, or I'm going to get a manager in here and they're going to run it for me and that. And
you've been running your business now, Sure Thing, for how many years?
I've been doing a Sure Thing and my partner here for about 16 years.
16 years. So on an average work week, how many hours do you and your partner each put in?
I would say we average 50 hours a week easily, if not a little more, a little less. Some weeks are more than others. Obviously our off season, November, December, we're not putting in as much on the bug business, although we're thinking more than we're doing our planning and some strategic things at that point of year. So we're maybe not putting the hours in, but we're still doing a lot of things with it.
Yeah.
Time of year, we might even, Jerry and I both have been out on weekends because it's the only time we can get appointments with people. And just like anything, if you're going to be in sales or you're going to take care of people, there are times where you got to do things you don't want to do.
No, you got to be out there when they want. So it's been my experience that when people start up a business, it's not unusual to put in 50 to 70 hours a week. In the beginning years, were you putting in more than the 50?
I would think that I probably, when I made the transfer over, you're right, I probably was putting in way more than what I am today. I have to think back on how many soccer games I missed or how many lacrosse games I missed back then. But, you miss those kind of things, I missed a lot of those games because I wanted to get out of the office at 4 and the calls kept coming in or something didn't needed to get done. And you just can't walk away from it when your name's on the door or people are dependent on you. And whether you own it or not, if you're going to work for somebody, you need to really be able to sometimes say, I got to give out that little extra effort to help get the job done and grow this business, or we may not be employed next week.
I think that's one of the secrets of owning your own business. You have to put that extra effort in. And lots of times we don't see employees.
Well, and I've been blessed, too, that I've had great people around me and good employees. We don't have a lot of turnover, it's Sure Thing, and that's a wonderful thing.
Well, that's great. Any last comments before we have to go?
Well, it's been a great discussion. Enjoyed talking with you about our business and my little bit of a career and things, and it's always fun. I think entrepreneurship and trying to build things, and right now I think we're in a real positive business environment. You just got to make it and look for what's good and make it work and find the good things in it.
Good. Glenn, I want to thank you for coming on the show. And
so Mike, thank you.
For being our guest. I'm going to give you one of our Sandler Insight books, which has become number one on Amazon.com.
Great. Thanks. Well,
thanks, Glenn. Thanks for being on. Scott, take it away.
Thanks for listening. If you have questions or comments, contact Mike at MikeRoth@RothConsulting.net or call Mike at 513-753-9400.